I work as an exterminator. I don't actually kill the bugs. I'm not the one who actually does the exterminating. I don't even pick up the carcasses of rats and mice and toss them away. I'm the guy who sends out someone else to do the dirty work. I get a call from your mother, your boss. They say, I need someone to kill the rats in my place. They're worried, they're frightened. I'm the guy who soothes their nerves, calms their fears, then somebody else goes out and takes care of the problem. Not me. I'm just a manager. This job is my life. I'm fucked. If I have to get on that same bus every day, things are worse than I thought. Every morning with the daily news, every lunch at Burger King, Whoppers, double cheeseburgers, Whalers till my nose bleeds. If this job is my life, I'm my dad. If I'm my dad, I'm fucked. Even at 12, I knew he was crazy, doing the same thing every day. Get up, go to work, shower, shave, come home, eat, sleep, and round again, and there's absolutely no release from this round and round. The only breaks your wife, children, beer, cigarettes, illnesses, sore back, bad teeth, lawns that need mowing, cars that break down, then eat, work, sleep, eat, work, sleep, eat, work, sleep, till you're so mad you can't stand it, and then, if you're lucky, you die. So, the way I look at it, if I have to do this again tomorrow, get up, go to work, eat lunch, come home, go to sleep, I hope I don't wake up, because I work as an exterminator. I found out recently, I'd been looking at things from a very Western point of view. I found out, in Tibet, rats were not what I thought them to be. In Tibet, rats are not just fat, hairy, plague-ridden beasts. In Tibet, rats have some status. In Tibet, rats are messengers of the gods. Which brings me to my problem. Every day, I send out people to kill the messengers of the gods. Not only that, but if they like it, they do a much better job, and I'm glad that they do. Even worse, as a teenager, I personally dispatched hundreds, maybe thousands of rats working for a biological supply house. I'd pick up the old, the infirm, the rebellious, grab them by a tail, swing them around, whack them on the end of the table, and end their little lives. So, what I'm wondering is this. Just how important to the gods are these messengers? What exactly are they telling the gods? If the gods don't get their messages, are they pissed? Is this stupid job in this godforsaken city their message to me? Has any of this sunk in yet? Is anyone listening? Anyone? When I quit my job, I thought, now they'll all walk out with me. Or at least they beg me to stay. You know, don't leave, we love you. Big raise, new office. That's it mostly. I quit my family, I drove away, and nobody came after me. I divorced my first wife, for sex with my wife. I met my second wife, Apple. I gave my third wife a job. I try not to bring my work home with me. So, you want to know, what's he have? What I have? I have a jar of pennies. It's about a third full. I have $1.40, or I did until this morning. I used it to buy the daily news and a container of orange juice. I had to dip into the pennies for the orange juice. I have a bed and a chair and a desk and a computer. I have a kitchen table. It used to be an outdoor table. I have plates and glasses. I have clothes. They're dirty and I can't afford to have them cleaned. I have a dog. She's dirty and snoring. I have a bar over an apartment in Jersey City. I have the roar of Palisade Avenue in my living room. I can see the hookers on Saturday night from my front window. You couldn't buy this. You wouldn't want to. You'd want to sit on the knoll, watch the valley spread out all around. Think about the sun, the quality of light, the light scud of clouds, the small cars on the highway. Isn't that a little red barn over there? Turn away, my friend. This is how the world seduces you. This is Satan in the desert, Christ looking at the heart of darkness. This is not the way things are. Things are mean. You ought to know that by now. Think about it. That barn, aren't there rats in it? That house, isn't that the house where the guy at the barn bar lives? The guy that kicks the shit out of his wife every weekend? It's an ugly fucking world. Don't let it kid you, brother. This town we live in is one long siren. Just one big traffic light, and it never changes. The people here don't speak English. The gas stations are all out of gas. The cops are all on the take. This town's always on fire, or a fire's almost always just about out. This town has two streets, and they both go the same way, straight to hell. But you never get there because the lights busted two blocks away, or somebody's double parked or turning left, or there's a bus in front of you that never moves. Everybody's old or a junkie or selling something to old junkies, or else they're cops sitting in traffic with their sirens stopped. And the old junkies lean out the window to watch the traffic. This town we live in is just one long siren. But there's a church, the last church in Jersey City. It has its pews in the backyard, its altars tipped over, its poor boxes ripped open. When you leave, you notice a squirrel drinking holy water. The seven parishioners who arrive each Saturday night arrive early so they can sleep late on Sunday. My hair is dirty and uncut. I have 13 cents in my pocket. I'm begging for money. I usually get it from someone. I believe in God. I don't believe in God. I believe the world spins. I believe if you step on a crack, you break your brother's back. I believe I broke my mother's heart when I left my first wife. I believe there was a crack in the world I fell in when my mother died. I believe if you find a penny and pick it up all the day, you'll have good luck. I believe I've been a cruel and selfish fool. And if God could see, he would reach out and touch me. And I believe the touch of God is the rough heave of waves on a thousand storm-tossed seas. I believe the golden tower of New York life is wrapped in dense fall clouds that taxis come and go, and try as I might, I can't get them to stop for me. This world of loss, cracks stepped on so often, the mother of God can't stop weeping. I believe I've stepped on a crack. I believe I'm lost. I believe I'm too little, too late, and I believe somewhere in New York, there's a street lit just a little by that spire, and I'm lost, and I'm walking down that street. I'm walking down Franklin Street in Jersey City on a hot summer day. I've got $20 in my pocket, a bottle of wine, and a bag of groceries, and I have to fart. But instead, I shit myself. And remember, it's a hot summer day. So the shit runs down my legs in brown ribbons, just like Greta Weitz in the New York Marathon. But this, my friend, is no marathon. Just a river of shit I jumped in, and now I can't get out. Waddling a little in the brown current, embarrassed though no one could see, at least not yet. This is being really sick. I'm also really stupid. Crying when you shit yourself and no one can see. Sick little shit-covered beast, all alone under a remorseless summer sun. Walking down Street in Jersey City, past the last church. I can't write about love. That's a sad joke. Last October, I came this close to dying of love, or something like it. HIV, AIDS, call it what you want, but it left me here, and now I can't write about love, or what my friend Lisa calls my personal doom. Because after all, how many ways can you say I'm dying? Just one, just once, I'm dying. And because I was dying, my brothers brought me to the town where I grew up. This town with its trees, its families, its planters hanging on porches, swinging slow in a summer evening. I grew up in this town. The girls I dated all lived here. The cars I drove went up and down these streets. Girls, and sex, and erections, and the odd smell of my first ejaculation. I remember hiding my underwear from my mother. Why would I do that? This house is too much of my past. This house my brothers made for me. This house, while I lay in the hospital, sheets they smoothed for me, floors they mopped, shades they pulled. While I lay in the hospital, all nice and neat and ready in this fussy house. This house I lie in night after night waiting for my personal doom. In this crappy town with all its lousy, happy people. Happy people in a haunted house. It's a sunny day in this shithole, and nobody but me sees the ghosts. The shit smeared on the floor from the man who sits on the toilet filled with shame. Nobody sees my brothers mopping, cleaning, pulling the shades, waiting for my doom. Who could write about this? Who would write about this? I can't write about love. So write about your illness. This is a friend talking, a decent, well-intentioned woman who I like, so I take her request seriously. When I first got pneumonia, I was weak, tired. Then the world got smaller, till it was just a pinpoint. Then another world opened, a world rich in hallucination, filled with visions of angels and shrouded demons and guides from another place waiting to usher me to their world. A world alternately filled with copulating familiars or bright with unspoken joy, and all the time each world whispering, pick me, pick me. And now and again in that fevered space, a human would appear to ask, how are we today? We're fine. But we're choosing not to choose death today, if you please. I wasn't ready to go. I wasn't ready to die. I lay on my back for a month. Oh, I'd get up to piss and puke, but mostly I just lay and watched TV, slept, and ate the skeleton of a whale. The skeleton of a whale washed up on a distant shore, a skeleton draped in a ready-made shroud. And I began to move about. It's not like a game, although my brother seemed to think it was. You've got to walk, he said. Walk I did. Or, you've got to lift weights. So we bought a set of dumbbells. But it seems these were all just games themselves. Things we used to fool ourselves into believing that by dint of hard work and training, I'd improve. Instead, weights crippled and disfigured me. The walking stripped away my precious pounds. What I needed was patience and prayer and food and the knowledge I was sick. I've always been sick. All of us are. Every day the body a battleground. Each of us sick and worn and tired. Each day we pick up our burdens and walk hand in hand with death. Then one night, full of spit and vinegar, I ventured out for a can of soda on a cold January night and looked up and saw the rich swirl of stars, and dizzy with joy, I fell and split my head, and out came everything I ever cared about. Shoes and sweaters and dinners in New York and girlfriends and boyfriends, and they all ran red and steamed on the snow. I almost couldn't move. The skeleton of an ancient whale washed up, surrounded by kelp and whale puke. But rise I did, and walk I did, and out of the mouth of the great beast came I, a decent, hard-working man, his head bowed under the weight of stars, the wretch of life. So, here's another way to think about my illness. Think about it like a winter storm. First, it's just weeks of gloom and cold. Vague stories in the press, worried friends, half-hearted attempts at preparation. Then one day it sweeps in, and it isn't a storm. It's a blizzard, and it snows for days, and you end up weak in the middle of white and wind and worry. Will it ever end? Will it ever stop snowing? Then it does, and you begin to move about. Slow through huge drifts. Then it's ice and piles of garbage and dog shit. And what took days to fall lingers for a month. And still it's cold. It could snow again at any time, and it does. A flurry, a couple of inches. Then one day, like a little miracle, it's spring and sunny and warm, but you're still chilled to the bone. And you look in the mirror, you see a frozen ghost. And friends want to talk about what it's like being sick, but who wants to look in the mirror? Who wants to see a storm growing far away? So, here's another way to talk about my disease. My best friend, my stigmata, my salvation. It wasn't a storm, it wasn't a trial. It was a time of shit and vomit and fever and angry parents who hate your guts. It was a long time spent with death. And all things being equal, I'd much prefer to avoid the mirror. I learned you can die. That all the medicine in the world might prove inadequate. And if it does, you die. I learned how to live with yourself when you shit your pants. And it's a good idea to have a portable toilet. I learned that being sick smells like being very young, and you could go a long time without sleep. I learned you have to wait. Some things take a long time, and they take that long no matter what. I learned not to put your hands in your pockets when you go for a walk. And if you should be so foolish as to go for a walk on a cold January night, do not look up at the stars. I learned you might trip. I learned because trip I did, my skull smacking the cold concrete. Wham! Just like that. So, watch where you're going. Don't look back. Death is just behind you all the time. Like a friend walking a little slow. Truth be told, I'm back at work. You know, it's not that bad. I get paid $10.50 an hour doing work that needs to be done. Work I would do for free. Work that needs to be done, like a farmer who has a second job so he can come home and plow the land. Like a painter who works as a printer for 8 hours, then goes home alone to a dirty loft, works for 5 hours on a painting someone might never see. It's not the money. It's not job advancement. It's the tufts of hay in the sun. It's the roar of the tractor. It's the shout of the boy in the back of the truck. It's the great deep gulp of water at the end of hours of hard work. It's the mumbled gasp of awe when a friend walks into the studio, looks up and says, "Oh my God, oh my God." We go to work, we buy our coffee in paper cups, we pour in cream. We want to do well and we get frustrated when we fail. But still, we have the loft. We have the field our father left us. Farm ripped apart by subdivision, so it's just 6 small acres, and only our brother cares about the farm. He trudges out at 6 in the morning each day to tend to the cows and the pigs and the scraggly chickens. And when he tells people at work he's a farmer, they say, "A farmer? Why do you care about the cows and the pigs and the scraggly chickens?" And when he asks his boss for a time off for haying time, the boss says, "Haying time? What the fuck is that?" What indeed? What about the crisp smell of turpentine and oil? What about the accretion of white? What about the rasp of knife on the canvas? What about the question of white? What about the happy rush of pigs to the trough? What about the deep smell of things long buried? Who else knows and who else cares? And still we pick up brush and knife and cleaver and plow, dig deep in the earth and think, "This is it, this is it." Oh, but my friend, this is it. This is the glorious rush of fruition. This is harvest. This is pumpkins dotting the soil everywhere. This is potatoes spilling up out of the ground like angry bones. This is ugly red and awkward gesso and the deep smell of manure. This is the farmer walking out through the field at 5 a.m. Saying to himself, "What the fuck am I doing?" What indeed? Wrong. People who work, people who farm, people who paint, people with courage and kids, and at least I have a job with benefits, and I think every day I wake up, it's a blessing. You get up, drink your coffee, go to work, and one day, on the way to work, you see the golden tinge of sun on the fields you drive by every day. You smell the air, the rich smell of the air you smell every day. You see the fog hugging the deep places in the back roads, and you think, maybe, it's a blessing I have today. A blessing.
For this thing, so ask them what they think.
What'd you think?
Great.
Thank you. Well,
great. Very honest, wonderful. Thank you. What needs work?
What needs work?
Everything needs work.
Besides him.
One thing that doesn't, that I thought was very effective, was the altar.
What's that?
It was good.
So can I replace the actor?
No. Yeah, please.
Get rid of him.
Like, you didn't say fuck me, baby Jesus. So that's a plus.
No, I didn't say fuck you, baby Jesus. You blew four lines.
No, but I think that's an interesting question. I think that Jack did a great job, but I also think you could have a larger resonance than that. I actually think, as a piece, it could be performed by other actors as well. Because I think it really speaks to so many people.
That's what he wanted originally,
you know,
but
I think you
no.
should put it on video so you can show what this performance is to people who don't have a chance to come and see it. And then you have a chance to talk about a larger resonance for it, and I think it's possible. I really do. I think it's in there. It's mesmerizing, really, because it's so human and it's
so personal.
The fuck out of town. Did you just use the word mesmerizing?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Oh, my God, his head is going to be as big.
I can say authentic, but everybody's using authentic.
We have a door on the way home.
He's going to make me put a star in his little dressing room.
He's going to make me start on time tomorrow. So.
Yeah.
Steve,
well,
I think it would be really interesting to see it with another actor.
Yeah, I
did too. To see what they
were. Really interesting.
He told me once he thought I was going to do it. I said, no way. You think I could memorize this?
To see what someone else would do, even with gestures and, you know, with the...
But I don't think anybody else can be Jack.
No,
that's not the point.
I think you did a great job.
Yeah.
I think
no
you do it.
But
I think it could have a larger resonance. It could be done by other people, absolutely.
Do you want to ask your audience anything?
No, I just want to say thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
I want their mice.
No, the mouse has got to come back out tomorrow.
No.
You can have the mouse on Sunday night when he comes home.
I want him mine.
No, it's got to replace my robot that somebody lost.
Yeah.
Somebody's
going to.
You have a toy robot?
Oh, I need a.